the Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 281.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He's become a very good friend of mine. He really needs no introduction. He has been doing this for 40 years, a proper OG in the freedom and liberty space. His name is Gerald Celente. Gerald, welcome back to the show, buddy.
No, George, thanks so much for having me on. I admire you so greatly and the wonderful work that you do and who you are, the spirit, the soul, the passion. And thank you so much for having me. It's a true honor to be on.
Yeah, well, you know, you and I were able to meet the other day. You were in Phoenix for a Bitcoin meetup that Max Kaiser did. And I went over there with my buddy, Mark Moss. And we were able to talk for at least an hour. We kind of just grabbed a beer and walked outside where it was a little more quiet, where we could kind of just discuss things alone. Because you and I both have very similar concerns when we look around not only the United States, but the world, and how our freedom and liberty is being attacked. So do you want to just maybe go into that conversation or start with how you see things in the world right now, what we should be concerned with? And then at the end, I want to talk about some solutions that you and I discussed at that Bitcoin meetup as well.
We've lost our freedom, and it's as simple as that. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's right there in the Declaration of Independence. And it makes it very clear that the governed are the ones that control the government, and they got it backwards now. And that when they rob you of your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we have the right to throw them out. And that's gone. There is no Declaration of Independence. George, do you ever hear one of these arrogant clowns who lock down everything talk about happiness? Happiness has become a dirty word. It's gone. You know, as I, you know, when we met out in Phoenix and I was staying at the Valley Ho. And, you know, so it was a classy hotel at one time where all the actors used to go to. They stopped serving at the bar at 10 o'clock at night. When I was a kid, they used to have this thing. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? You know, we're out wild. Now everything's locked down at 10 o'clock. The streets are dead. They've sucked the joy out of life. And for what? To fight the COVID war. And I'm not making that up. That's the way they sold it from the very beginning. The COVID war. We're marching off to the COVID war. And as one of the covers of the magazine, the Trends Journal had, dumb enough to believe Bush's wars, dumb enough to believe the COVID war. Right. And this is nothing new in history. As just as they marched off to Mussolini, saluted Stalin, hailed Hitler, the masses march off. There's that great artwork. It's a graph that an artist did of Napoleon's march to Moscow, and the weather patterns follow behind it. He leaves with 420,000 men, young guys, comes back with 10,000. Nothing has changed. The masses are marching off. There's a poll that came out, Axios Ipsos poll, it was released on Tuesday. It finds that only 1 in 5 Americans say they are not likely to get vaccinated, the lowest level since the start of the index. The percentage of Americans who stand in hard opposition to getting vaccination has also dropped to its lowest reported levels of 14% of U.S. adults. Okay? This is from the Trends Journal, September 29th, 2020. Americans get cold feet over COVID-19 vaccine. The poll showed that only 13% of Americans would be willing to take the vaccine upon rollout. This is the same company that did this other poll. And you had Biden and Harris going after Trump, saying, "I trust vaccines," Biden said. "I trust the scientists, but I don't trust Donald Trump." And they were against the vaccination in the beginning. The website Stat responded that many Democrats have indicated a swift vaccine approval would be politically motivated by the White House. Harris said she would not trust the vaccine under Trump. Biden agreed with his running mate. The Axios Ipsos poll showed that there has been a rise in suspicions about taking the vaccine. Most of those polled, about 30%, said they would wait for the vaccine to be released and wait a few months before taking it. Again, the whole thing has changed. And here's our trend forecast right here, which makes us different than when you're just reporting the news. Remember, this is September 2020. As we have noted, from nations' capitals across the globe to Wall Street, the word is that until the COVID vaccine is made available to the public, there will be no strong economic rebound. Therefore, the faster the vaccine hits the main street, we forecast resistance to get vaccinated will decrease as the major media and politicians promote getting vaccinated as the only way to win the COVID war, with virtually no mention of building up one's immune systems and getting healthy. Governments will impose educational and other restrictions on all those who refuse to get vaccinated, just as they have done in many states and nations prior to the coronavirus. Remember, they were forcing kids to get vaccinated in school. So we saw this coming. Now, if I wasn't a political atheist and I had an agenda, I would have written, there's going to continue to be strong resistance against the vaccination. But I saw how they were selling it, spending hundreds of millions of our dollars to promote it. And you had Krispy Kreme and all these other ones, get the vaccination, get the vaccination, get the vaccination. And so here we are. We've lost our freedom. I want to tell you a quick story of what happened to me last night. Sure. There's this beautiful place called the Hutton Brickyard, and it's right on the Hudson River. It used to be an old brickyard. This top-end hotel chain took over. And I'm there last night. You know, I want to get away, be on the river, feel good. And I start talking to this guy that's a lawyer. And I know this guy, not really well, but we respect each other. And I'm talking about, you know, we got to get somebody in here to run for office. I said, these mandates that they're putting us are terrible. He said, what are you talking about? I said, forcing people to get vaccinated. You can't get into a place. I'm down the city. By the way, I did the Columbus Circle rally on Saturday in New York City. I was one of the speakers. And I couldn't go to all the restaurants because you needed a vaccination passport. He said, well, I agree with that. Anybody that doesn't get vaccinated is stupid. He said, just as, you know, they have the polio vaccine for the measles, for the chicken pox, for the, I said, these aren't vaccines. I said, they're gene therapy shots that are the first to be injected into human beings. No, they're not. I said, yes, they are. But he said, the efficacy rate is 93%. I said, actually, they say it was 96%. No, no, no. They said 93. I said, okay, let's say 93. I said, let's look at the latest study that just came out of Israel. He said, listen, I don't want to talk to you. He said, I had enough of your crap. I'm not going to take it anymore. I've had enough of your bullshit. I said, don't talk to me like that. He said, I'll fuck you up. I said, oh, yeah, you will? I said, come on outside. Come on outside and talk to me like this. I said, you're a lawyer? I said, you can't stay on the line. I said, you're full of shit. I said, you're a lawyer? I'm giving you facts and you're going all over the place. Let's go outside. He said, you want to talk to me like that? Let's go outside. And his girlfriend came on. There's a lawyer. And I call this guy out. I said, you're a little piece of shit. You're not a lawyer. I said, you're a little slave to nothing. And the point that I'm making here is that they're going to go after us. The people that took it, that don't have the courage to stand up, are going to want everybody else to get it. And I read, when I did the rally in New York City on Saturday, I read this, there's two judges in New York. One guy's name is Radoff, or I call him Jerkoff. This guy refused to give the people, two, Zimmerman and this guy Radoff, They refused to give the plaintiff, the people that they were charging, any freedom until they got vaccinated. Two judges demanding. I said, oh, two Jewish guys. I said, you guys would have been great over there in Germany, forcing people to get vaccinated. And I said, don't call me an anti-Semite. I said, three of my last girlfriends out of the four were Jewish. And then I went with a joke. I said, you know why Jewish men die before their wives? And the crowd said, no. I said, because they want to, you know. I said, don't call me an anti-Semite. What you're doing over here, Hitler would have been proud of. Mussolini and Stalin would have loved it. And that's become America? Well, I got people forcing me to. And I'm telling you, this is not the first argument I've been in. And I try not to, I didn't start this as an argument. When I'm flying back from Phoenix, first class now is like third class, you know, it's junk. Anyway, this sloppy guy sits next to me. First class is nothing anymore. And they ordered drinks. I got a Bloody Mary. He orders a Diet Coke. And I'm saying to myself, this guy has to be in his 60s. What moron would be drinking a Diet Coke at this age? Guy has a mask on with two things on the back. Poof. When the food came, he took the mask off. We're talking like nothing ever happened. You're allowed to drink and eat without a mask. But when you finish drinking and eating, put that mask back on because that's when the virus comes. Just like when you go to a restaurant.
Yeah, when you're eating, the virus just takes a time out, Gerald. You didn't know that?
Well, I understand. Now that I understand the data, you know, I've realized that. And they're serving different people down the aisle, so it only comes in between the bites, you know. So anyway, we're talking. It turns out he's a doctor. He's a doctor, this overweight guy dressed like a slob and drinking Diet Coke. And I start asking him questions about the vaccination, blah, blah, blah. And he goes on, 96% efficacy rate. And as you well know, you know what I do as a trend forecaster, I outline all the salient points and stories. And I'm coming back from the trip, so I had a ton of stuff. And I pull out the New York Times. I show him, I said, it's only 39% effective according to Israeli data. He said, no, that's not true. I pull out the newspaper and I show it to him, New York Times. Well, you know, but it's very important to get it. I just dropped the conversation. 39% efficacy rate when they lied to us that it was 96% efficacy rate, and now they're giving you three shots.
Yeah, it'll be more. But, you know, one thing that baffles me, Gerald, is a lot of people get, you know, in this debate about the efficacy. And obviously that's a valid point to bring up. But I think a bigger concept that we need to understand is going back to your original story about the lawyer, you know, how he said, oh, well, I think these mandates are fantastic. What boggles my mind is intelligent people only look at it from the standpoint of the business to the consumer. That's all they see. Or they look at, oh, well, the vaccines are good, therefore we should have a mandate. But what they don't do is they don't look at the relationship with these vaccine mandates between the government and the business. And what the government is saying, listen, business, it is illegal for you to serve a certain portion of the American population. It's illegal. So where have we seen that before, right? That's Jim Crow laws. And you would think that people, especially on the left right now, would look at something that is quite literally identical when you look at it from the standpoint of the government to the business as a Jim Crow law and say, you know what? That's probably not a good idea. That's what nobody talks about and all these smart people miss. And it blows my mind. Another thing that they completely miss is what about someone that has natural immunity from having a prior infection. Do we really want to force these people to get a vaccine? The risk reward profile is completely different with someone that already has natural immunity. And the benefit to society, if you want to say that there's this benefit and that benefit for people who are vaccinated, it's the exact same benefit to society for someone who has natural immunity. So why are we forcing these people? And then you've got I know it's a small percentage, but you have several, a significant group out there that just even doctors will tell you that it's not a good idea for them to get this type of vaccine, whether they've got some sort of health issue, or maybe they're, you know, at a certain, they've got some sort of comorbidity or something like that, where it's not a good idea that their body doesn't respond well to vaccines. So are we just telling these people that they can no longer participate in society? This is what all those people completely miss, or they just ignore. And I don't know which it is.
Well, the point you made about Jim Crow is right on. And I've never heard that before. That's a perfect analogy. And as far as them buying it and selling it, you know, as we wrote, you know, again, the Afghan war, it's over now. You know, I got blackballed from the media because I had forecast that the United States would lose the Afghan war.
Right.
88% of Americans supported it. 88%. To dumb enough to believe a little daddy's boy born on third base, a little clown of nobody, George W. Bush. How stupid and ignorant and lack of self-confidence can you have to listen to this little jerk? Who's, by the way, his ratings were going in the toilet before 9/11. People forget the dot-com bust happened in 2000, in March of 2000. So just several months later, we're in a severe recession. The Afghan war starts and the phony real estate bubble and everything else goes after that. When all else fails, they take you to war.
Right, right.
And that's what I'm concerned now, because we're going to have an economic collapse, the likes of which we've never seen. Look at the data just coming out. Hey, airline travel, boop, back down to May levels. People are afraid. It's one after another. Look at the hospitality sector. Oh, all the conventions, trade shows that are being canceled. All the business travel that's gone. All the people here, you know, from you know, one piece of information after another. The people leaving going to the exurbs, which has been going on, pulling out of big cities. What is the office occupancy rate in New York City? Oh, it's under 20%. Hmm. Oh, what about all the businesses that depend on that? Right. What about tourism? This thing's going down big. The commercial real estate sector is going to go a bust like we've never seen. And just to make it clear, New York City, before this happened in 2019, West Village, Fifth Avenue, East Side, West Side, all around the town, before this happened, for rent, for rent, for rent, for rent, for rent, for rent, for rent.
Mm.
Yeah. And now it's everywhere. This thing is going to go. So what I'm saying is, when all else fails, they take you to war. And I'm very concerned. People forget, before this happened, one of our top trends that we write in December for the new year, in 2021, or 2020 rather, was New World Disorder. There were protests going on in Lebanon, in Hong Kong, in France, in Chile. Bolivia, Colombia, all over the world. India had seven consecutive quarters of declining growth. People were taking to the streets. South Africa, the COVID war broke out, no more protesting. And where did it break out first? Lunar New Year, the year of the rat, Chinese Lunar New Year, 2020. I used to be on Hong Kong TV during the protests. They couldn't stop them. They couldn't stop them. Boop, ending, finito, total control, security law. And one country after another stopped it. Going back to what you also said about the relationship to government, to the business sector, how about the relationship to the drug dealers that morons and imbeciles call big pharma and government? Who was the little clown boy, Scott Gottlieb, got nothing. That little clown of a jerk that was the head of the FDA under the Trump administration. Mm. Where is he now? Oh, sitting on the board of directors of Pfizer.
I didn't know.
Sitting on the board of directors of Pfizer, from the FDA to Pfizer. Could anybody see this or think about it? Why, Salenti, calm down. Don't get angry. Be like the rest of us. All aboard. Next train to Vachwitz to get vaccinated.
Yeah, you know, I want to make a point, Gerald. I just did a whiteboard video where I did some research that I found some facts that I just didn't even think about before. And I think you may find them interesting because, you know, one of your points there is that the economy was broken. So many people think that this downturn or depression or recession, whatever you want to call it, was a result of the Cerveza sickness, or better said, the government's response to the Cerveza sickness. But they don't realize that the economy was incredibly unhealthy prior to that. And whatever response we had with lockdowns and whatnot, that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. That's what exposed how fundamentally unsound the economy was. And it exposed all the cracks that we had in the system. And the example I used for the video is going back to the Spanish flu. Because we do have, they're not great, but we do have GDP numbers during that time frame. In American history, you know, call it 1918 to 1920 or so. And you know how much GDP went down during the Spanish flu? Almost zero. Almost zero. Barely even budged. So then just look at any chart and you can see GDP from peak to trough in the United States during 2020 going down by, call it, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but going down by, call it 10%. And that's with $4 trillion of deficit spending. So think about where GDP would have been without that $4 trillion of deficit spending. And I want to point that out because we need to make an apples to apples comparison. That's because good. Going back to the Spanish flu, how much government deficit spending did we have back then to combat that? Or how many stimmy checks went out in 1918? Zero. Zero. So if you take and you take out, or if you take out the government deficit spending, I mean, you've got GDP going down by 20, 25, maybe even more percent, where comparing that to the Spanish flu, that was far worse than what we've seen with the Cerveza sickness. GDP barely went down at all. If it might have not even gone down even 1%. So that's proving your point that there were serious underlying fundamental issues that what happened in 2020 just exposed.
That's great that what you did. That's a great comparison. I never heard that before. And of course, they didn't lock down everything. And go back to 2019. You remember the repo markets. What did the Federal Reserve jump from September 2019 to January 2020? They only pumped in $7 trillion.
Yeah.
And people forget that Trump was badgering Powell to lower interest rates because things were slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
He wanted negative rates.
And it was, so the thing was collapsing before then. And people just don't want to realize it. And they forgot about it.
Yeah.
But the point that you made about the comparison between the Spanish flu, and again, when you look at the COVID, I mean, who is it killing? You know that expression, pigs can't fly? You've been to the airport lately?
That's true.
All right,
though.
So who's
That's
dying?
That's true, man. That's
42% true. Of Americans are obese.
Yeah.
42%.
Yeah.
Look at the... Nobody talks, you started talking about it earlier, and I wanted to follow up on that. Nobody talks about building up your immune system to get in the best physical, mental, and spiritual shape you can get into.
Right.
I mean, you think I want to work out every day? You think I don't want to eat more of more cannolis or something, or Sliadel? Of course I do. You know, I try to control it. The first book I worked on back in the mid-1980s, was Natural Healing. It was a Warner book. And my former wife, may she rest in peace, sold the book to Warner Books. And this doctor who helped her, she had severe, he was a chiropractor, severe ulcerative colitis. At 27 years old, they wanted to take out her anus and her intestines and put it in a bag.
Wow.
And we went on the journey and she totally healed. But anyway, I have an honorary doctorate from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in complementary and integrative medicine. Today, you are not allowed to talk about natural healing. The only way you will be healed is to buy a drug from the drug dealers. An allotropic drug, by the way, that does not cure any chronic degenerative disease. All it does is closes down the symptoms a little and then makes you sicker in a whole lot of levels. And all you have to do is listen to the stupid drug ads on TV that Bill Clinton brought us and they weren't allowed before. But going back to the whole thing, nobody talks about natural healing. Oh, what happens if you do get COVID? What should you do? How can you fight it? No, don't worry about it. We're going to wait till you really get sick and then you can put you on a ventilator that don't work either.
All right.
But again, who's dying from it? And why are they injecting young people when the recovery rate, according to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, are 99.997%, and for everybody else, 99.7%. Why are they doing this to us? And why are you masking up little kids and freaking them out for the same reason they had me as a kid, my generation, hiding under a desk in case an atom bomb went off? That was really going to help, you know. When you're under a desk, the atom bomb doesn't touch you. And then when we got too big to get under the desk, they had us in the hallways with our hands behind our head in the school. And they used to say to you, if you see a flash, don't look at it. If I see a flash, I'll be dust. Yeah. We have the same people doing the same thing, making up the same crap.
Socially distanced.
I mean, they're making this crap up. And they're doing it again. And just like they fought the Cold War and robbed us of our freedom, what's going on now, beginning in 2020, is unprecedented in world history. World history. Look at Australia. Look what they're doing. One country after another.
What do you how much freedom do you think we lost with 9/11?
Oh, that was the beginning of the end.
And the Patriot Act.
That was the beginning of the end. I mean, you got this clown Biden. Again, they're all clowns. He voted to give Bush the power. Violation of the Constitution, that only Congress has the right to vote to go to war. And they vote to give the El Presidente of Los Estados Unidos the right to go to war. Some little piece of shit. Who the hell are you? Hey, don't you know who my daddy is? My daddy was George Bush. My granddaddy was Prescott Bush. And he won re-election after starting the Afghan War. And going back, by the way, there's a movie that they did about me. It's only 15 minutes long. The woman playing it, her name is Doris Roberts. It's from one of my books, what Zizi gave Honey Boy. The name of the movie is Zizi and Honey Boy. Doris Roberts is the woman that played the mother on this TV show, Everyone Loves Raymond. And the trailer, if you go to YouTube, you put Zizi and Honey Boy trailer, and it shows the 30-second trailer of me saying to the guy and the producer on the show, you tell them that I said we're going to lose the Afghan war. USA Today used to run my top trends every year when it was a big newspaper. And the 2000 trend was for 2001. The headline read in USA Today, anybody could see it, 2001 won't be our year, Trendsier says. And I warned that a wave of anti-Americanism was sweeping the globe. And Americans wouldn't be safe at home or abroad. So when the war began, and they're asking me why, I said, look at the America's foreign policy. Bill Clinton, Madeleine Albright, on with 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl when she's ambassador, is the price of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five worth that have died because of the sanctions that Bill Clinton put on Iraq worth the price? And Madeleine Albright says, yes, it is. With the Kosovo war, what's going on with the Palestinian and Israeli war? On and on and on, all the bombings around the world that the Americans were committing, as we used to say in the Bronx, payback's a bitch. So that happened. And then they banned me from TV. I used to be on Oprah, the Today Show, Good Morning. It's about everybody, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Joan London, all of them. Banned. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. George W. Bush accusing me of being for the terrorists. The man that owns three of the most historic four corners right over there, what I'm looking at, The only place with pre-Revolutionary War stone buildings, I'm in Kingston, New York, the first capital of New York State. Right across the street, right there. The capital, this was the first capital of New York State. The Constitution that was written here, over 70% of America's Constitution comes from it. The third Dutch settlement, John Jay was a judge here. I bought those buildings. I was looking to leave the country in 2010 and realized I couldn't go anywhere. There are two-bit freaks everywhere. This is my country. Love it or leave it, you leave it. This is my country. That's why I bought these, when nobody wanted them. Because it's a symbol of America. And that's gone. The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, it's gone. They've robbed us of our rights right in front of our eyes. And they still have that Security Act that gives El Presidente the right to take us to war.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
But it seems like the overarching theme here is that, number one, for, I don't know why, but people just cannot seem to do a cost-benefit analysis in certain times. When they have fear, it seems like just the human condition doesn't allow us to do a cost-benefit analysis. And people can't see liberty being taken away, or they can't see the long-term consequences or risks of short-term freedoms and liberties slowly being taken away. That's why I asked about the Patriot Act. And if you look at, let's use Australia as an example right now, in New South Wales, they're in complete lockdown. They're allowing their citizens, and they even use, we're giving them the freedom. The government is giving them the freedom. Those are the words that they use.
Yep.
To go outside 1 hour a day.
Yep.
1 hour a day. That is a police state. That's a totalitarian police state. So you have to ask, okay, well, what is the cost benefit? They say, well, the benefit is that we're reducing cases and we're saving lives. Okay, well, how many lives, right? Let's say it's 100, or let's say it's 1,000. Is that worth turning your entire country, or at least that part of it, into a totalitarian police state? Like, what's the downside of that? People can't see. It's like they're completely ignoring the downside of turning a country into a police state. And it boggles my mind, you know. And another thing I'd like to get your opinion on that I've been trying to think through is, you look at the difference between Australia and the United States right now, right? And our response to this. And prior, you know, going back to 2019, you would say that Australia and the United States, for the most, they're very similar countries, you know, kind of similar laws. But I've lived in Australia, and I know that prior to the you know, 2020, although, yes, it was a democracy and whatnot, they had far more rules and regulations in Australia. So what I was wondering is, do you think that Australia would be where it is today, or at least New South Wales, under complete, total lockdown, where people are basically in jail? Do you think they would be there today if the rules and regulations were similar to a Texas in 2019. You see where I'm going with that? Like the fact that the Australians allowed the government to take more and more of their freedom prior to 2020 is the reason now they have absolutely no freedom.
That's right.
The frog was being boiled very slowly. And we see that play out right in front of our eyes when you contrast the United States to Australia. And with Americans, I think that should be a warning to them that if we continue to allow the government to take our freedom slowly in the name of safety, at some point in time, the probability is high that we are going to be New South Wales and we're only going to be allowed out of our house an hour a day.
Yeah. Again, let's talk about leaving our house. According to the data, what are the chances of getting it outside? Less than 1% without a mask. Less than 1%. And you're telling people to stay in. Look at New York State locked down under that little daddy's boy, another daddy's boy. Like George Carlin said, there's one big club and you ain't in it. Lock it down. Look at New York's death rate compared to opened up Florida. They keep going after DeSantis. The death rate's much lower. They got 1.5 million more people and lower death rate. And the new governor just came in. They said another, 15,000 died that they were lying about. And again, you look at the data, it's not working, number one. Number two, with Australia, what you were saying about people, why can't they see what? When I was a kid, my father, may rest in peace, I'd be complaining about something, and he'd say to me, son, take it easy. He said, people have little minds. Go back to Australia. Wasn't that World War I great Gallipoli? Wasn't that wonderful for all those soldiers that died there? For what? For what? It's been going on forever. The masses follow. They keep going on and on. And that's where we're at now. People have little minds. They don't read. They don't think for themselves. That was another thing. When I would shoot my mouth off, in Italian, my father would say to me, Papagallo, stop repeating what everybody else is saying and think for yourself. And then, you get in a fight with your father and he'd say to me, you little bastard, you think I'm telling you what I'm telling you because I want you to be like me? I want you to become yourself. Not anymore. That's not allowed. You talk about the left. There is no left anymore. People are misusing that term liberal.
Yeah, right.
Liberals are open-minded people that you could be anything you want to be, open to civil liberties.
Right.
They're gone. I'm over here in Woodstock. It's only 15 minutes away from me. Woodstock, it is the worst. The worst. Everybody's masked up. They're all freaked out. And you have no right to express yourself. I've been banned from, I used to be on all the radio stations. Nobody will have me on. Because I started calling Cuomo out. I was the first guy to call him out. This little bastard renamed the Tappan Zee Bridge after his daddy.
Who, Cuomo?
Yeah, it's called the Cuomo, Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. And first they put the Mario Cuomo Bridge up. They forgot to put the M in there. They made him take down all the signs, put them back up. It's the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge now. And it costs us $20 million to do it. So when I called these people out, I like Cuomo. I think he's wonderful. I used to know, I began my career at a graduate school. I was the number two guy running the mayoral campaign in Yonkers, New York. I didn't want to work, but it was something to do. I just want to have a good time. Anyway, it was chump change to me to do this thing. So I got to the top right away. Angelo Martinelli became the longest running mayor in Yonkers. This is a city of 300,000 plus people. I worked on district attorney's campaigns. They sent me up to Albany. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate at 26 years old, excuse me. I was killing environmental. I designed and instructed American politics and campaign technology, how to run campaigns. I taught it at St. John's University. I then became a government affairs specialist for the chemical industry. I was killing environmental legislation at the height of the environmental movement in the 70s. At 28, I'm staying at the Willard Hotel, putting my meetings on at the Hay Adams. I got a photograph of me and Ronald Reagan. I was with him for an hour and a half, picked him up at Chicago Hilton, who's a keynote speaker at our event, 2 days before he's running against Gerry Ford. And I put on a brunch with him and 16 of our board of directors. I've been with presidents, princes, and prime ministers. I wouldn't know what I know if I wasn't on the other side. And I know what the other side looks like. And as we'd say in the Bronx, when you call these guys out man to man, they wouldn't know whether to piss or shit. All they do is suck their way up to the top. They're not fighters. All they care about is themselves. Career politicians. How low can you go to look up to a Mitch McConnell, a Chuckie Schumer, a little Lindsey Graham, a Nancy Pelosi, a Feinstein? How could you be so low to look up to these people, or a Macron, or a Sanchez, or a Merkel, or that one over there in New South Wales, Gladys been jerking off? You look at these people. So going back, the people are not fighting for their freedom. They follow the orders. And what I'm saying from a guy that's been on the other side, we can win. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. And we are that tireless minority. We are American patriots. These people are anti-American. They're anti-Constitution and anti-Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights. It's up to us to unite and fight. Because if we don't, as a trend forecaster, this is going to be hell on earth.
Yeah. So let's go over some things people can do to really move the needle. This goes back to our conversation the other day. And one thing I want to point out to everyone listening here that really wants to make a difference is I think you have to look at people in thirds. So you've got, and you and I discussed this, we've got one third of the people that will be very receptive or maybe agree with what you're saying about maintaining our freedom and liberty. You've got another third of the people that you'll just never reach. They're just gone. They want to be told what to do. They want to obey. They want to delegate their thinking to the government, and nothing you say is going to make them change their opinion. But then you've got a third in the middle that hasn't done the research. They don't really know what the Fed is. They kind of assume that the politicians are there and that they are motivated by goodwill. And but they know that something just doesn't seem right with what's going on in 2020 and 2021, going back to the GFC. You know, they know something, all this money printing, the Federal Reserve doing QE or I just hear about it in the news. Something just doesn't seem right. Or maybe it's just they see the unemployment rate at all-time lows going back to 2019, and they look around them and they don't see a healthy economy. So it just doesn't feel right. Those are the people that I think that we need, that we can reach to really move the needle. And if we can reach those, that one third, then I think that we've got a shot of winning this thing. So the question becomes, once you've isolated that group, how do you reach out to them in a way where they'll be receptive to the message?
Yeah, and that's what we talked about. We have to unite under one umbrella. I went to the rally in New York City, in Columbus Circle. About 2,000-3,000 people showed up. That was it. Out of a population of 8.3 million. And I'll be speaking at Ron Paul's War on Us event in D.C. on Labor Day. And my topic is going to be, we must unite. United, we stand, divided, we fall. And the only thing I could think of, we have to come under one umbrella. There has to be one umbrella, one voice coming out with all of us united for the same cause as I see it. So one of the thoughts I came up with was to, I formed a church, the Universal Church of Freedom, Peace, and Justice. Because with a church, you seem to have a lot of power, and you can't go after them the way you go after a political party. And our message is that whatever God you believe in, whatever religion you believe in, if it believes in freedom, peace, and justice, and you believe that it's being robbed from you, let's unite under that umbrella. Again, that's only my thought. I'm not selling it, but I don't know what to do because I know that we cannot win if we have all these little groups fighting separately.
Yeah. And people won't be receptive to a message if you cram it down their throat. Like as an example, if you've got all these Facebook friends that don't, you know, they just watch CNN all the time, but they fall into that one third that just knows there's something's not right here. You know, if you just send them, you know, meme after meme after meme on, you know, people, the negative impacts of the vaccine or something like that, they're just going to completely ignore you. Yep. They're going to completely ignore you. So I wrote, you know, I actually wrote down a couple things that I thought, okay, well, maybe this is a better angle to take. You can't do it directly because then it's going to turn people off. But maybe you can do it in an indirect way by maybe encouraging the friends and family members that you have that are in that one third to maybe listen to Ron Paul. You know, Ron Paul still does a lot of videos on YouTube, and hopefully that could be like a gateway drug that they're more receptive to, instead of just telling them over and over again that they're stupid for watching CNN, and you know, then you look like a quote unquote anti-vaxxer, and then they're just going to completely tune you out. You know, and from my standpoint, I always tell people this, that I'm really not anti-vaccine. I think you should have the freedom of choice to determine what you want to do, because everyone's risk reward profile is completely, completely different. And what I'm against is government issued mandates. That's what I'm against. So, but anyway, another maybe gateway drug is introducing people to Bitcoin. And I'm not here to say Bitcoin's going to 500,000 or 100,000 or it's going up or down. That's not what I'm here to say. I do know though, because I went to the Bitcoin conference, that a lot of people today know more about liberty and freedom, sound money, and Austrian economics for the sole reason that Bitcoin went way up in price. If Bitcoin would not have gone up in price, if they would not have seen Bitcoin as a way to get rich, they never would have been introduced to all of these concepts that they now value and believe in wholeheartedly. So maybe that's another thing that you can do with your friends. Also with gold, you know, introducing people to the principles of sound money is something we can do now, when every single day they turn on the TV and they see all these stimulus checks going out. They see the Fed's balance sheet going to over $8 trillion. They see the deficits at $4 trillion. They see the deficit to GDP at over 20% in 2020. And even the average Joe and Jane looks at that and says, wait a minute, how can there not be a downside to that? So maybe you introduce them to gold, you introduce them to macro, you introduce them to Mises. And what I, and not just the whole, don't give them a book, but I just give them the quote that Mises used about the crack-up boom. And if you just give people that quote, say, look, this is what this Austrian economist was saying decades ago. It's called a crack-up boom. All they have to do is read the paragraph. And they'll say, you know what? That's exactly what's happening today. Maybe I should look a little bit more into that. So what do you think about that approach for just the average person watching this video?
I think it's excellent. But again, you're only going to get the ones who want to learn.
Yeah, right.
And again, to me, the bigger one is right now, because we're in a very crucial place, is how do we unite us? Mm-hmm. Again, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men since Samuel Adams. And when the revolution happened, how many people were for it? Under 5%. At the height of it, under 50%.
Yeah.
So it's that third that you were saying. I agree with everything that you're saying. And that's part of the whole thing and going on. But we need to come under one umbrella, as I see it. Because we can't, again, I'm talking New York City. 2,000 people at tops.
Yeah.
And everybody, and by the way, the cops didn't bother anybody. They didn't bother anybody. And they weren't masked. A couple of them were. They didn't bother anybody.
Yeah.
And we marched down, you know, 6th Avenue or 7th Avenue and over to Bryant Park. And, you know, they didn't bother us at all. They closed down the street to let people go on. They were cool about it.
Yeah. And I think, Gerald, that you and I really have a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And I think many people that will watch this video also have that same sense of urgency. I think that's important that we all have that sense. And for those of people who are kind of on the fence saying, oh, well, you know, this will pass. I like Gerald. I like George, but I'm just going to more focus on, you know, having some beers with my buddy this weekend or taking my kid to soccer practice. And, you know, 2 years from now, we'll forget that this ever happened, this episode in U.S. history. I want to just do a quick screen share for the person that's kind of on the fence, and then also get your thoughts on how far we have gone here and how close we are to, you know, kind of an Orwellian future when you look at 1984. So let's see if I can do this screen share real quick. Okay, so can you see this Forbes article, Gerald?
Yes.
So look at the title. You must not do your own research when it comes to science.
My God.
Is that just unbelievable? And I also want to show you a meme that I found and posted on Twitter that has basically the same type of message here. And I'll just try to go to my Twitter feed. Can you see this? This meme going around. So it's a tombstone. It says 2021. I did my own quote unquote research. So the message here that we're now getting from the third that we just cannot reach and CNN and the mainstream media is that if you think for yourself, you'll die. So if you don't want to die, then you need to allow the government to do all the thinking for you, and then you just need to obey. So if you didn't have a sense of urgency before, hopefully that will give you the sense of urgency that you need to get out and at least start talking to your friends and family members that are receptive to hearing the message of freedom and liberty. What are your thoughts, man?
Perfect. That Forbes article is scary, and it's true. And that's what they've done. Mm. And, you know, this is the urgency is the right. It's that's where we're at. It's urgent. If we don't act again, my greatest fear is they're going to take us to war. Because this economy is going to crash.
And you're talking about Bitcoin. Do you think that would be a civil war, Gerald?
Oh, definitely.
Or a war against civil China?
They're going to take us to war as well. When the economies crash, go back to everyone, World War I, World War II. What preceded World War II? Oh, they called it the Great Depression? Go look at the banksters, what they did prior to World War that murderous low-life scum, Woodrow Wilson, bringing us the Federal Reserve, and then putting us into World War I. Oh, and by the way, who's our Treasury Secretary now? Oh, the former head of the private banksters, the Federal Reserve. He even used that word, it's Orwellian, to call it a Federal Reserve. As people know, you know, that listen to you and the Bitcoin people, and they're as Federal Express. And we have that person now as our Treasury Secretary. This economy is going to go down big. It's going to go down hard. Yes, there'll be a civil war. It's going to be the vaccinated. It's already now the story I just told you. The vaccinated against the unvaccinated. The vaccinated hate the unvaccinated. They're going to keep blaming the unvaccinated for all of the problems. Not that the efficacy rate of the vaccine is a lot of crap. Not that the people dying from it have 2.6 pre-existing comorbidities. Oh, and you've got 800 colleges, over 800 colleges in the United States now forcing young people to get vaccinated. From the beginning of the COVID war to now, about 540 people under the age of 17 have died from the virus. 540 people in over almost going on about a year and 9 months out of 75 million people. That's that age group.
Right.
And you're telling me that they got to vaccinate them? This is demonic. Look, they found a skull that's 36,000 years old. Did you see that recently? And it wasn't a Neanderthal. It was a human skull, a bigger skull. The point that I'm making, we don't have a clue. 36,000 years ago, I thought everything happened when Moses came down with 10 commandments, you know? You mean, oh, the shifting of the earth? No. Everything began then, and we know everything now. We don't have a clue. Something's going on, as I believe or feel, that's bigger than we could understand, because this is global. This is global. We got the banksters running our lives. There was this guy, they say Jesus Christ, drove the money changers out of the temple, became violent, drove him out of the temple, built his own whip, didn't buy it at Walmart. Poof, 3 days later, the cat's hanging on the cross for screwing with the banksters. The drug dealers. Hey, that Afghan war is a great one, huh? Who warned us about the military-industrial complex robbing the nation of the geniuses and scientists, the sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children? Oh, yeah, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 5-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, 2-term president. And big tech. That's who's running our lives. And look at the little freaks. Look at that little Zuckerberg. Look at that Cook. Look at that Pitts, the other guy from Google. Look at him. Look at him. As I said, look at the freak politicians that are running our lives. And we're letting this happen? We're letting this happen? How could it be?
Yeah.
This economy is going to go down hard and big. And that's why I believe Bitcoin, I believe gold, I believe silver. And they're all going to go digital, by the way, all the major currencies. So they know every penny we spent, where we spent it, how we spent it. Oh, look at these slimy, low-life politicians. Have any of them did a pay cut during the COVID war? Nah. But you're a non-essential piece of shit. Close down your business. You're not an essential business like Walmart, like Costco, like Home Depot.
Amazon.
You're a nobody.
Yeah, and you know, I think the decision that people, just to make it very, very simple for them, I know you're a student of history and you talked about the Revolutionary War. So let's just go back there for a moment. I want to point out something that most people don't realize that you kind of implied there, is that you had two groups of Americans for the most part during the Revolutionary War. And most people don't realize that if you read the diaries of a lot of Americans, they didn't refer to it as the Revolutionary War. They referred to it as a Civil War. And the reason they did is because you had the Tories on one side. Those are Americans. Those were loyalists to the king, to Britain. And then you had the people who were called patriots. And they were the revolutionaries, let's say. So what was the motivation behind each group? What was their narrative? You know, what did they believe? Why did they believe why did one group believe that we should stay with Britain and the other group believe that we should go to war? Well, it's very simple. You could boil it down to just one word. For the Tories, they valued safety more than they valued freedom. Their argument was that we can't cut ties with Britain because their navy protects us from all of these boogeymen out there. And we need that naval protection for our security. Therefore, we should go ahead and give up our freedoms to get the British Navy on our side. Well, the Patriots said, no. We realize that we're foregoing safety, but our freedom is far more important. So the Tories valued safety. The Patriots valued freedom. And you have to ask yourself, who is on the right side of history? Was it the Patriots? Was it the Tories? Because we see the exact same thing playing out today. You have a group of Americans that value safety above freedom. And you have another group of Americans that value freedom above safety. So when we look back 20 or 30 years from now, who do you think is going to be on the right side of history? I can almost guarantee you it's going to be the Patriots.
Of course.
Once again. So these people that are watching right now, you've got to ask yourself, are you a Tory or are you a Patriot?
Well,
I think that's one of the main takeaways.
Perfectly said. Perfectly said. Amen. Perfect. And what did Benjamin Franklin say? Or Jefferson, one of them has a quote about safety.
It's Franklin. Yeah, it's Franklin. Some people say that he didn't say it, but that's who the quote was attributed to. He says, those who give up essential liberty for short-term safety deserve neither liberty or safety. And, you know, I had a discussion the other day with Simon Black, Gerald, and I told him that if you had to give the people watching this video an elevator pitch as to why freedom was more important than safety, what would your elevator pitch be? He said, because if you study history, you'll see that the reason most societies collapse, and not all, but most societies throughout history collapse, it's because the citizens lose freedom.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up.
That's it. That's it. And, you know, the reason, by the way, I bought these buildings, I was looking to leave the country. And in 2010, but we were opening the Trends Journal up in Germany. And I'd never been there before. And it was, we went to Berlin. And I landed like 8:30 in the morning. They took me to a hotel, picked me up at 11 o'clock, drove me all around. And I'm looking, this place is beautiful. Parks everywhere, no building, maybe over 16 stories tall. And then about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're sitting down having a beer. Cafe, the sidewalks are wide enough for cafe tables, 4 and 5 deep. And I'm looking across the street, place to walk, place to bicycle, on the sidewalks. And I'm looking at median in the middle, beautiful trees, and I'm looking at a beautiful German building, maybe 1880. At the same height, all new construction. And I realized everywhere they took me, I saw the same thing. Beautiful German buildings and all new construction around it. And I'm thinking in the 1930s, the Germans were at the height of Western civilization, culturally, scientifically, philosophically. Berlin was grander than Paris before it was bombed out, as I saw it. And I spent a lot of time in Paris. And I'm saying to myself, how can they let a two-bit freak destroy their country? And then I said, the war was coming to an end. Why didn't the people stop it before it was totally destroyed? Where were the people? And every German I know, my age and younger, but not kids, I used to ask them all the time. They wouldn't talk about it. They were ashamed of themselves, ashamed of themselves. And being an Italian, how could you let a Mussolini run and ruin your life? Where was your fight? So I came back and it was a for sale sign. I left on April 17th, 2012, came back on April 27th, and it was a for sale sign that went up when I was away on the 1750s Franz Rogan house. And I took possession of it on June 1st. I paid cash for it. I realized I can't run away. There were two-bit freaks everywhere. Love it or leave it, no, you leave it. This is my country. Don't you tell me what to do. And that's why I bought these. We are at that same situation now.
Right.
We are letting Hitler's, Mussolini's run and Stalin's run and ruin our lives. We are on the, if we don't fight, it's going to be destroyed. Germany, what? Berlin. Destroyed. I used to talk to all you know, my uncles and stuff. They would tell me, man, in Germany, boy, were they way ahead of us in electronics. I remember the refrigerator in a place that I saw. It was way better than what we had over here. They were way ahead of us on so many different levels. Oh, how'd the atomic bomb get built? Oh, what did we took those German guys over here and brought them over here, right? But they were way ahead of us. And the people didn't stand up and fight. It was destroyed.
Yeah. And if you read history and see quotes from those people as to why they didn't stand up and fight, and most of them say, because we thought it would pass. We just thought it was temporary.
Or they lacked the courage. And that to me is what it is. Look, you know, do you have to teach a rat, a mouse, a squirrel, a bird, an elephant, a tiger how to fight? They know how to fight. They took the fight out of us. Now you have to learn how to fight. You take, you know, taekwondo or whatever, you know, learn how to fight. I was in the smallest kid. In those days, the smallest kid was always the first online in school. I hated school. I ran away from kindergarten at 4.5 years old and crossed the Boston Post Road. They took me out. I'm going to be dead. I learned how to fight right away. When we moved to Yonkers from the Bronx, I was the toughest kid and the smallest kid. You know, you learn how to fight. And I had my own school. I taught close combat for many years. But you have to teach it? They've taken it out of us. How about listening to that little boy, Chrissy Cuomo? Yeah, we need no bullying zones. I remember, no bullying zone? Grow the hell up. And by the way, I used to be on CNN like 3 or 4 times a month, and they used to bring Chris Cuomo around. And I knew his father. I knew the brother because I was involved back then. And I go, hey, Chris, how you doing? Good, good, good. How's your brother doing? Good. How's your father? You know what he used to do? He used to have 2 young aides with him, and he was doing sports and pop culture. And again, it's one big club. As George Carlin said, and you ain't in it. So they put all the people in there that are going to be part of the club.
Yeah.
And now he's this arrogant little boy.
I'll leave it at this here because I know we're running short on time, but I was watching, I'm trying to just study as much history as I can. So I was reading and watching some stuff on the Ottoman Empire and how it grew and then how it, collapsed or what the Ottoman Empire's demise looked like and why there was this, rise to fame and then, it's just this gradual decline over the decades. And I was watching the same thing in reading about Rome the other day as well. And every single time I try to look at one of these empires and the decline, it brings me back to one quote. And that's the quote where hard times make strong men make good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times. If you look at all, at least the ones that I've studied, that's always the reason they decline. That's what we're seeing today.
Weak men make hard times. Is that the quote?
The quote is hard times make strong men. Yeah. Strong men make good times. Good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times.
That's right. The weak men make hard times. As I said before, look who we're taking orders from. Weak men and weak women.
Yeah.
This what just happened with America's defeat in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
This should be a wake-up call to everybody. This is the fall of the empire. It's over. The 20th century was the American century. The 21st century is going to be the Chinese century. The business of America has been war. The business of China is business. And think about it. We used to make fun of the Chinese for wearing them masks and being forced to lock down by their government.
Yeah, good point.
Now, the Chinese way, you must obey. It's the American way. You must obey.
All right, Gerald, let's leave it there, buddy. I sure appreciate your time. Awesome conversation as always. Hopefully next time we talk, it can be face to face again, because that's just
I'd love to. I got to come out and see you.
That's so much better. But for my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do or the Trend Journal, where can they go?
Trendsjournal.com. It's history before it happens. I showed you, we say what's happening, then we give the forecast. And the motto of the magazine, by the way, is think for yourself.
Exactly what we need today.
Yeah.
All right, Gerald, have a good one, buddy.
And thank you so much for all you do. I'm truly honored to be on with you.
It's an honor to have you on. Hi, guys. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to the next Rebel Capitalist Live event. If you are a fan of the Rebel Capitalist show, I guarantee you, you will love the live event. The next one is Houston, where you can meet and listen to speakers, all your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist show. People such as Dr. Ron Paul, Chris Cole, Lynn Alden, Luke Groman, just to name a few. If you want to check out the rest of the speaker list and find out how you can attend, we'll put a link in the description below, or you can just go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. This is an event where you can learn to build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. But it's not just about building wealth. It's about increasing your freedom and networking with like-minded individuals, fellow rebel capitalists. It's an amazing event. I know you'll absolutely love it. Check out rebelcapitalistlive.com, and I will see you in Houston.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.